Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast, the MERS political newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Roerink, and our special guest this week, Janelle Leonard from the Marketing Resource Group, and TJ Buchholz from Vanguard Public Affairs. And a little later in the podcast, we're going to be speaking with Laura Cox, the chair of the Michigan Republican Party, and Lavora Barnes, the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party, about the elections. A lot to talk about on that front with our panelists and our friends this week. But first, let's talk about the news that everyone's talking about. Gretchen Whitmer spent a few days, or at least one day, in Delaware to talk to Joe Biden, presumably about the vice presidential possibility. And John, it almost feels like the fact that this news was kind of leaked out there on Friday night, and it almost just gets the feel as if that is getting expectations up and getting a little bit more bounce before the inevitable letdown.
I think you're right, Kyle. If you look at the way and the place that the story came out of, it was clearly a Michigan-based leak. It was clearly, I think, designed to sort of boost up the Whitmer name in the closing days before the vice president makes his final choice for VP. I still have a hard time believing, if you look at the politics, that selecting Gretchen Whitmer from Michigan does much for him. I think he's already got Michigan. You could probably pencil it in the win category practically. I think you undermine some enthusiasm on the African-American side if you don't pick an African-American female.
TJ, you agree or disagree?
I think John's right. I think at the end of the day, you know, Democrats have an embarrassment of riches. I think, you know, they're talking about, you know, they've narrowed it down to four women, Kamala Harris, Susan Rice, Gretchen Whitmer, Elizabeth Warren. And, you know, we'd be fortunate to have any one of them as a candidate, a vice presidential candidate. So I think we're going to be good in either case. But given the climate and given the mood of the country right now, I still think, you know, it would be likely that Joe Biden would pick a woman of color. That being said, all four of them would be terrific. You know, Gretchen Whitmer, I think, has proven in the crisis that she can lead, that she can lead effectively. She has very, very good support here. But again, you know, Michigan most likely to go blue this cycle. I think that they may look elsewhere. But, you know, if they land on Whitmer, I think that they'll do very well in November.
It seems like if they were leaning toward Whitmer, though, Janelle, that the Whitmer camp would have wanted to keep this a hush-hush. I have a feeling that if she was a real serious contender, we would not have known that she went to Delaware.
Right. I agree with that as well. It's kind of the same kind of leaks, quote unquote, that we had about did Biden actually start talking about Kamala Harris a couple weeks ago? Was he trying to give that edge? And I agree with TJ. I mean, Whitmer does seem to check most of the boxes other than being an African-American, you know, Midwest governor, swing state. She's willing to pack the punches, which obviously is getting a lot of headlines with that. But I agree. I believe having an African-American on the ticket is what the Biden team seems to be leaning towards. My hunch is that she goes with Rice, that he goes with Rice at the end of the day. They've worked closely together. They've close confidant working in the Obama administration, and she does actually test all the boxes. On Brown, though, I think the only question is, you know, is she, you know, tested politically? Has she ever, you know, debated, ever been on that kind of stage, if you will?
Now, the one thing about Whitmer here, though, she has certainly got a lot of public bounce out of this. All the interviews she's done, Janelle, she's really gotten her name out there. That would seem to set her up for something down the line.
Absolutely. No, she's done a great job. The team has done a great job on the political side, getting her name out there, making sure she's saying the right things. I mean, we've seen it just here in Michigan with her approval ratings, and obviously she's getting that national name as well. So that definitely does not need to be discounted. So whether she becomes the VP or another pick within the administration moving forward, if they were to win, I mean, I think anything is on the table at this point.
Why? I guess it's striking while the iron's hot, right, TJ? I mean, why let a situation go by without taking advantage of it?
Well, I mean, I think that the media have tried, I think, in earlier months to say, well, Whitmer was a hot ticket, and now she's declined. Her stock a little bit has declined, and now she's back in there. I'm not sure that she ever came off Joe Biden's radar. I mean, they're very close. I mean, she's a co-chair of the national campaign. I mean, they've campaigned together. You know, Biden likes her grit and the way she runs Michigan at this stage in the game. He has loved the way she's led during the pandemic crisis. So, you know, whether she's the vice presidential pick or she will play a critical role, I think. And, you know, and perhaps, you know, going to Delaware may have been, you know, a consultation with her, you know, one-on-one to see what she thinks about, you know, final choices. But for me, you know, Kamala Harris has been number one for, you know, 16 straight weeks in terms of, you know, the odds makers per se, the pundits saying, you know, who's likely to be the nominee. I think she's tested. I think she comes from a very prominent Democratic state. I mean, I know they had a little bit of dust up during the debates, but that's what you're supposed to do. I would bet my money right now on Kamala Harris.
Well, John, we know what your pick was, and you picked this a long time ago. Are you sticking with your motorcycle riding congresswoman out of Florida?
I certainly am, and I'll tell you why. Florida is actually still in play, I think. I think Biden would secure it a little bit more. He's leading there now in the polls, but he would secure it a little bit more by picking Val Demings.
And John, we've talked about Val Demings before, and you've mentioned that she was the chief of police for the Orlando Police Department before joining Congress. Why is that helpful, though, to Joe Biden in this ticket? Because
here he's bringing on to the ticket a former police chief, someone very familiar with the men and women in blue, and sort of some of the discussion that's going to be taking place as we deal with the death of George Floyd going forward.
Taking a look at what Gretchen Whitmer said over the weekend here about Trump's executive order, it certainly makes it seem like she wants to get in a few closing shots before maybe the national spotlight moves on to Val Demings or whoever the nominee is going to be, talking about his executive order being nothing but politics. She's just keeping things going for as long as she possibly can.
Yeah, she certainly did sound like a partisan, I'm still in the hunt for VP in that statement, did she?
Kind of sound like it. So one of the things that I thought of, TJ, when I read her statement about Trump playing politics with his executive order, reinstating the additional unemployment payments for workers, doesn't it seem somewhat ironic that Whitmer is accusing the president of overstepping his bounds as an executive when the Republicans have accused her of the same thing here in Michigan?
Well, I think you're talking about two completely different situations. I mean, Gretchen Whitmer has been exercising some power, you know, with emergency declarations in the face of the pandemic. You know, Donald Trump is trying to legislate, you know, unemployment benefits from the White House when actually that is the role of Congress. So you're talking about two completely different situations. But, you know, I think Gretchen Whitmer, you know, has really, you know, and she's a veteran politician. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I think Gretchen Whitmer knows that her opinions annoy Donald Trump. She's not afraid to mix it up with him. And I certainly think that, you know, she's going to be a surrogate for Joe Biden moving forward in any case. And, you know, the media gravitate to her. So if Donald Trump says something that rubs her the wrong way, you can bet that she'll take the opportunity to lambaste him with it.
Is she a cabinet possibility, TJ?
Yeah, I think so. I think there are a lot of slots you can put her in. She's an attorney. I think that helps a bit. But I think she's a cabinet possibility. Again, we're fortunate here to have a very strong lieutenant governor, an African-American lieutenant governor, which is, I think, a plus as well. So, you know, Garland Gilchrist has, again, been side by side with Gretchen Whitmer in the COVID-19 crisis. So I think it's very likely, if she's not the vice presidential nominee, that she would be offered a cabinet post and could take it.
Health and Human Services.
That's a possibility, but it seems like she really likes the situation in Michigan that she's got right now. She's got basically complete power. She can do whatever she wants, it seems like, as far as policy. She doesn't need the legislature to sign off on anything except for the budget, technically. She's got a pretty good gig going here, Janelle. It's going to have to be a real sweet post in order for her to leave Michigan, and I just don't see that happening.
Well, at the end of the day, would you turn it down if it were offered to you? You got a pretty good gig at Mars, right? But at the end of the day.
I don't know. Can they offer me what John Ruhring can offer me? I don't know.
well, at the end of the day, I mean, if a position like that is handed to you, I mean, what do you do? You can't say no, right? And going back to the statement, I mean, she's a contender right now for vice president. So clearly she had to come out against what the president did and be the attack dog. It continues to put her in the spotlight for both Trump and Biden there. So, yeah, I mean, she wasn't going to do anything different. And obviously what she's done in Michigan has, with her executive orders and the policy aspect of COVID, has impacted her approval ratings, right? So, you know, while I personally don't agree with doing policy or budgets through the executive. Obviously, it's playing politically here on the policy side. So it's not, we'll see what it does with the president's approval ratings too.
But here's the thing, though. When you're a governor, you're one of 50. One of 50 people in the country that have that kind of authority. Michigan is a pretty valuable state in a lot of ways, a lot of resources, a lot of people. You know, so it is a plum job. But Gretchen Whitmer is still very, you know, she's got a lot of years left to make a career. And I think, you know, governor, I don't want to say governor's never a stepping stone for anyone. But do I think that she has a future in presidential politics down the road? I think that answer is yes. It's just a question of when. And, you know, as Jennifer Granholm used to say, too, you know, timing is everything. And, you know, I think that's got to factor into her calculus when she thinks about, you know, do I take the vice president's position, which she obviously would. Do I take a cabinet position? You know, timing is everything, especially when you're, you know, in your late 40s, as Gretchen Whitmer is.
It is. But remember, Joe Biden could easily turn to his national co-chair and say, because you've been so effective with the science-based approach you took with COVID-19, I want you to quarterback the nation's response once I'm sworn in to COVID-19. And what is she going to do? She's not going to say no.
And I think that's Janelle's point, which is, you know, I think if a president asks you to serve, regardless if you're a Republican or Democrat, that's a very tough position to be in. And I don't know too many people that would turn that opportunity or that moment to serve down.
All right. Well, let's turn the page here quickly. Talk about the election on Tuesday and some takeaways. Obviously, to have the number of ballots cast, either absentee or in person, record setting here in the state of Michigan as far as turnout, would seem to indicate an enormous turnout for the general election and a good sign for Democrats. Would you agree with that statement, John?
Yeah, and I was also fairly impressed. So pockets of delay, though there's always been pockets of delay in waiting on results in Michigan. Some of these were a little bit longer than normal, but I think it actually bodes pretty well for November. Obviously, the volume is going to be probably three times the volume of what we saw on Tuesday. So, but I think the system, I think there's signs for hope that we'll actually get through November with a heavy mail-in vote.
Should this be concerning for Republicans, Janelle, to see this kind of turnout?
No, I mean, the turnout was obviously increased. A lot of that was from the absentee side. On the consultant end, you know, what our job is always trying to find that sweet spot for voters. Like, when are voters actually ready to engage? I mean, candidates want to engage on filing deadline, right? Back in April. Nobody cares at that point, right? So consultants, again, our job is to make sure we find that sweet spot of when voters are ready to educate themselves on the candidates and the issues and start driving them towards supporting your client. The absentees actually, you know, I was concerned, like, how is this all going to work? And I know a lot of us are still trying to figure that out for the general. But in this past election, we found that our clients that implemented an aggressive absentee voting program ended up winning their election. And a lot of that is because when the voter is requesting their absentee, they are then saying, I'm ready. I'm ready to start talking. I'm ready to start engaging. I'm ready to start educating. So by us implementing that absentee program, allowed us to hit them at that sweet spot. It kind of took the guessing game out a little bit, which again, that ended up boding well for our clients that had the absentee. I'm still on the general. I think the House Republicans maintain majority. I feel good about the candidates that came through the primary and some of the swing seats, and then also some opportunities for a pickup or two.
TJ, I wanted to get your thoughts on this, because when I looked at the primary election results, what I saw was a lot of familiar names being successful. I saw people who had resources be successful, not necessarily outspend their opponent, although if you outspent your opponent, you probably won, but they had money to bring to the table and were able to carry out their message. And those seem to be the people who had success.
Democrats are feeling good, but, you know, I think we have been burned by this before and recognize that, you know, we have to get our vote totals up. I think a strong AV program is always important, you know, for our clients, you know, in August, those that had a strong AV program, that had a strong digital presence, you know, that were successful. You know, others who, you know, who decide that they don't want to go that route, it's a tougher road to hoe. But I think name ID is always important. I think we're going to see unprecedented numbers of voters. And some of that is because you know, the absentee voting process has been made easier. It's easier to vote from your home. I think when you pile COVID and the pandemic on top of that, it makes it more likely to people to vote from home. You know, I'm concerned about, you know, the influx of mail-in ballots. I'm concerned about the Postal Service and its ability to be able to handle that. You know, as Americans email 20 million Christmas cards out every year, I think that we'll be okay with, you know, with ballots as well. So from my perspective, I feel like Democrats are in a good position. I feel like they are positioned to perhaps take majority back in the House, but it's going to require all of us working together and, you know, a strong boots on the ground program like it always is. But, you know, one other thing, point I'd make, Kyle, which is I do think that between the pandemic and, you know, Ann Gresham Whitmer, you know, the state is more polarized than it's ever been. And I think strong, you know, Republican strongholds are going to remain strong Republican strongholds and vice versa. You know, Detroit, you know, and Oakland County, which is now becoming more of a, you know, a Democratic stronghold than it's been. They're going to do well. But I still think that, you know, that you've got a lot of spots in this state where it's going to depend on how hard the candidates work and how much they spend.
If I'm Republicans, I got to be a little nervous here, because when you start talking about high turnout numbers, take a look at what's happened in this state when we have had high turnout numbers. The highest turnout we've ever had for an election was 2008. That was that Obama year where we had 5 million people voted. We had a strong Democratic majority in the House at that time. You take a look at gubernatorial elections. Where did we have the highest turnout for a gubernatorial election up until the Whitmer election in 2018? That was in 2006 with Jennifer Granholm with 3.8. And the Democrats obviously took majority during that time. We're in the last year of these maps, John. I'm really nervous if I'm a Republican right now.
Oh, I think you've got a lot of cause to be really nervous. Look, the president's already paused, maybe even stopped his spending in Michigan. I was watching TV over the weekend. I think I must have seen 25 Biden ads. I didn't see a single Trump ad. The Republicans should be very nervous, because look, he's not doing well among independents. He's not doing well among the groups that helped him eke out a very narrow lead here. And I think strategy wise, if the national campaign could very well do even before the calendar mark where John McCain abandoned the state, Trump could very well abandon it, which means a lot of down ballot concern. So, yeah, if I were Republicans, I'd be a little worried right now.
Well, somebody who is going to talk to us about whether she's concerned or not is the chair of the Michigan Republican Party, Laura Cox. Join us now. Okay, joining us now for the podcast is the chair of the Michigan Republican Party. It's Laura Cox. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So as you take a look at the results from the primary election, start to digest them, where did you really feel like there was Republican enthusiasm? Where in the state did you say, yeah, that is very encouraging going into the general election?
Well, there was a couple places. I think the two that I can see right now, James in Macomb County, he did really, really well against a seated U.S. Senator. He outperformed him. And so we're really happy about that. And we feel that that's going to be something that's going to pay off in November. I also saw that in the six districts, for instance, the Republicans totaled against the Democrats with about a 20,000 difference. You know, the Democrats say they want to flip that seat. I would say that their candidate coming out of a really kind of interesting primary with a no-name candidate and a candidate who's been running for almost 2 years, he barely won. And I think that their chances are slim to none, and they'll probably change their mind on that. And Congressman Upton will be easily reelected.
John?
I was going to ask you really quickly what your take on was with the race of Hernandez and McClain, and was that a surprise to you? Had you been following that closely?
I have met Lisa on the campaign trail. Funny story, I know her mother. Did not know that it was her mother till I met them at a campaign event And we're really excited for her. And, you know, we think that she ran a really hard campaign and, you know, we're excited for her. I worked with Shane, as you know, in the state house. And again, and then you had another strong candidate in Slocum and, you know, a veteran. And so it was going to be an interesting race to follow. And they all were great leaders. And we're excited to make sure that Lisa is the next congresswoman for the 10th district and is a strong female. And we're excited about that to have in Congress for the Republican Party.
What do you think Paul Young's going to have to do in the 8th congressional district in order to get money and get some additional resources to challenge Alyssa Slotkin? Obviously, she's got some $5 million she's already raised. He's starting off with a little bit of a deficit there.
You know, I just think part of it is he's going to have to talk about what he believes in, what he stands for, and why that's different from Alyssa Slotkin. Alyssa said she was going to be a moderate and voted with Nancy Pelosi, I think, around 96 to 98% of the time, and why he'll be different and be a strong voice for the folks, the families and the businesses out in the 8th district. And that's something that they need. And I think that he'll be, you know, give him some time and he'll be able to talk to the voters. And I think his message will resonate.
And then I want to ask you the same question in the 11th congressional district. Eric Osaki, looks like he's the nominee there. That was a pretty low publicity race. And maybe it's just because I'm in Lansing. I didn't hear a lot about it. Same thing with him. What kind of odds do you give him against Haley Stevens?
That primary was definitely a grassroots motivated primary. There was a lot of activity, a lot of signs, a lot of emails. I actually live in the 11th and I did get a good amount of mail from several of the candidates. And I saw them working the events when we were able to have events, working them pretty strongly. I think Eric is going to be a strong voice for the people of the 11th. Again, we lost that seat in 18. I think people are frustrated and the president outperformed in 16. And so I think that we feel that we feel comfortable that he gets the message out that he will be successful in flipping that seat back.
I mean, with the global pandemic, the president's facing big headwinds. The polls have not necessarily been as favorable as you might like them. When you talk to your activists and your volunteers and your team members about keeping their heads up, what do you tell them? And I guess talk a little bit about the enthusiasm at the party.
Sure. You know, listen, it's not easy to excite people about President Trump, but one of the things that grassroots activists love about him is because he is unique, he is different. He is the president for every man. And that is something that, you know, we keep talking about and how the policies that he's pushed forward affects positively everybody's family, everybody's neighbor, everybody's business. And we will continue to talk about that. So it's not really hard to get people excited to work for him, to get him reelected, because they understand how wonderful the economy in the country was doing, how unemployment was at historic lows, how people's lives, their 401ks, everything was flourishing under his policies and under his leadership. He wanted, you know, he supports the police. He wants to keep people safe. He had criminal justice policies that were supported by Republicans and Democrats to make sure that people's lives were getting back on track, that they could be a part of society. Those kinds of policies mean something to people's lives, and we're going to continue to talk about those policies and why it would be important for them to get him reelected. And people are excited across the state. We've talked to over 4 million voters across the state, and we build on that each and every day. We have 80 people embedded across the state working to get Republicans elected, and obviously at the top of that list is President Trump.
So I was taking a look at this report that the Trump campaign is on the air in Georgia, North Carolina, Arizona, states that he won in 2016, but not on the air in Michigan. What did you make of that?
I didn't really make much of it right now. It's still a little early. You know, we are in constant contact and partnership with the president's campaign each and every day. Like I said, we have the largest campaign of any presidential election that I can know of, really, in my history being a Republican. Like I said, we have 80 people. We're building on that each and every day. We're training volunteers each and every day. And we're talking to voters about why we need to elect Republicans. And we're going to continue to do that and keep our eye on the prize, and the campaign's going to do what the campaign does. And you know, people make a much to do about nothing, because in the end, we believe and we know that Michigan is a must-win state for the president to get reelected. He's invested in Michigan from the very get-go. He's never left us, and he will continue to support us in his policies and his campaign as we move forward.
And I hear you on that, but if you take a look at the numbers, he does not have to win Michigan to win the Electoral College. I mean, technically, he can get to 270 without Michigan. What happens if he pulls out of Michigan? Is there a contingency plan to make sure the rest of the ticket doesn't submarine?
Well, I don't think that we're even considering that. The bottom line is Biden, in comparison to the president, is a terrible, awful candidate. He's still holed up in his bunker. We're excited to support the president. We have a great campaign operation going on. We're less than 90 days out from the election. We're going to continue to build on that each and every day and talk to voters and remind them why they need to support Republicans like John James to get a strong voice in Washington, D.C., obviously like the president, and Republicans in the state house and locally. You know, we'll have a Supreme Court candidates coming out of our convention. We're going to have a Board of Education, you know, MSU, Michigan State, coming out of our convention at the end of August. We've got a lot of excitement and enthusiasm on our side, and we're excited to deliver in November.
Is there a turnout model you guys are thinking that is most likely to happen as far as participation level? Is there maybe another presidential election in the past you're looking to as an example of this might, you know, run the course just like that did?
Well, we have a strategy, of course, and obviously I can't reveal all our secrets, but I do know that we have a very specific strategy. We're very data driven. You know, as a state party chair, my job is to get out the vote and do election day operations and, of course, support candidates up and down the ballot. And so we have specific data driven modeling that we are focusing on, and we have a plan, and we have a plan that we're going to execute, and we've been working on it and building on it for months and months and months. And so this isn't just like, oh my gosh, now we have to figure out what we're going to do in November. We have been doing this, planning this for months and months, and we're going to execute it. We're going to execute it with some wins, and we're pretty excited about it.
What do you see being the issues that you guys are going to push on the Republican Party the hardest?
Well, I think one of it is strong leadership and strong voices in D.C. I think people are frustrated that they send people to Washington, D.C., and they waste time on partisan games and, you know, wanting to play games and not deliver for the people of Michigan. And they're frustrated. And you have a 30-year elected official like Gary Peters, who isn't showing up for assignments that he was supposed to be a voice for the people of Michigan as well as the country in oversight on China operations, on small businesses. Those kinds of things mean something to people. If they feel that people aren't going to work when they're getting paid to go to work, they get frustrated. And we're going to talk about that and why we have, in contrast, a strong leader that wants to be a strong voice, wants to go to work, wants to show up to the meetings and talk about good policy that's going to positively affect their lives and families. And let's use Congress for an example. Under Pelosi's leadership, you know, we had the Democrats, you know, wasting time on an impeachment. And, you know, we had that USMCA bill tied up with a bow that's going to positively affect people's businesses and their lives in Michigan, in manufacturing and agriculture. Our state will benefit. One of the highest states in the country will benefit from that. And the Democrats were sitting on their hands because they'd rather waste time playing games. The president is a president of every man. He wants to make sure that everybody's represented. He wants to make sure that everybody has a chance to survive in the world, to excel, do live their American dream, and be happy and provide for their families. And he's going to continue to push policies to make sure that America gets back to work and that people's voices are heard. He is a leader for workers. He's a leader for veterans. He's a leader for police. He's a leader for women. We have so many examples of his strong leadership, and we're just going to continue to talk about that.
Chairwoman Cox, you had mentioned the convention a second ago. What do you see the Michigan State Convention looking like later this month? Is it going to look a little bit like the one that we saw earlier this summer?
Yeah, unfortunately it is. I'm pretty disappointed. We're not able to cobble together a plan that would be within the ever-changing executive orders of the whims of our governor. You know, she teases that she's going to roll back, give us more restrictions. Again, I think today she did that in the news, and we don't know because, of course, it has to be a teaser, and we all have to sit there and wait to decide what the Queen's deciding to do. The bottom line is she won't work with the legislature. People don't have a voice, and I cannot enter into contracts knowing that I could put on an event for thousands of people. So we have to do a virtual convention again, unfortunately. We'll have a online voting and a live component as well.
Okay. And then the last question I want to ask you about is your home city of Livonia. Just taking a look at the results there in Livonia, it looks like Lori Pahutsky, who is the Democrat who was running unopposed, is going to end up getting more votes than the Republicans. Kind of give me your feelings on watching your home city go the other way as far as Republican-Democratic swing.
Well, yeah, like I said before, the election is in November. We're going to wrap our arms around, I believe it's Martha Tashnick, that will be the winner there. I've met Martha. She's an exciting individual. She's a teacher. I think she's was born in Livonia, but I don't know about that for specifically, but I know she's raised her family there. She's a lovely person. She's a Spartan, so of course I have a special camaraderie with her. We'll make sure that she's successful in flipping that seat back. That is a Republican seat, and we feel really good about that seat. We're going to have to roll our sleeves up and work hard, but I know that Martha's ready to do that. And is excited to do that. So we're excited.
All right. Thank you to the chair of the Michigan Republican Party, Laura Cox.
I'm blue, I'm a need, I'm a die. 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 I'm blue, I'm a need, I'm a die. I'm a need.
Join us now for the podcast as the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. It's Lavora Barnes. Thank you so much for being on the podcast with us.
It's my pleasure to be here, Kyle. Good to be with you.
Well, let's talk about what you saw in the Tuesday primary election. What did you see in the results that encouraged you the most?
I think the biggest spot for me is my team tells me that over 1 million votes were cast on the Democratic side in these primaries. And it's record-setting turnout we saw in August, and it bodes well for a strong November turnout. So I'm very excited about that and about the level of enthusiasm our folks had for finding a way to vote safely, given what's going on with the coronavirus, and get their votes into their clerks.
We had primaries in districts that are supposed to be competitive in November. I'm thinking the 6th Congressional District, the 45th State House District, the 38th State House District. Is that good to have such competitive primaries, particularly in the 6th there where it got a little messy there at the end?
It's funny. I used to say when I worked at the State House that I didn't like primaries, but I think primaries give our folks a great opportunity to sort of stretch their legs as candidates and get some good work done early on. I think that every one of our candidates who came out of a primary probably comes out of a primary nice and strong because of the work they've had to do. I feel really good about the candidates who won these primaries. And all in all, I think primaries probably turned out to be an okay thing for us this cycle. And lots of enthusiasm, right? Lots of Democrats wanting to run is also always a good thing from my perspective.
It does seem like the party that has the most candidates on the ballot is the party that has the enthusiasm on their side, that's for sure. But what about in the 6th District where you had that Jen Richardson was not going to be supporting John Hoadley right out of the chute because of some things that he wrote back in college?
I think that Jen Richardson probably benefited from being a woman on the ballot, frankly. I think, as everyone listening to me should hear me say now, women run for office because it helps to be a woman on a Democratic ballot these days. John Hoadley's a terrific candidate. I am proud to call John Hoadley a friend, and he will be a terrific member of Congress. I think that, you know, perhaps with some conversations, we can invite Jen to join us in our support of John, who's going to win that seat for us in November.
I had a quick question for you. This primary seemed to go better than a lot of people thought it might. But thinking about the general election, which the turnout's going to be much larger, we have a much more significant volume of mail-in votes. What are your worries? Are you optimistic? What keeps you up at night?
I'll start by saying how proud I am of our clerks and the work that they did in August in some really tough circumstances to prepare for and get through the vote of this large number of vote by mail or absentee votes. I think that the legislature should allow these clerks to start handling these ballots earlier so that they don't have to do this entire process on election day. I don't want them to count them early, but I do think that clerks should be able to prepare to count them before election day. And I think the legislature should also look at this law that requires that these ballots land on election day before 8 p.m. I think a postmark should be good enough. I think that given what's going on with our postal service, we cannot count on the postal service to get the ballots to the clerks on time. And there are ways the legislature could give the voters some relief there.
As you've looked at the postal service, have you and your colleagues across the country come to any conclusions about what's going on there? I mean, is this being done intentionally, the cuts? What's going on with that?
It's hard to say. I mean, I hate to accuse any administration, even this one, of tampering with the Postal Service to affect an election, but it certainly feels like they're tampering with the Postal Service to affect an election. I think that if we can follow Gary Peters' lead here and get this Postal Service fully funded and taken care of so that they can do the job that we need them to do, all of us will be happier and our elections will be safer.
Speaking about Donald Trump, you had made some comments earlier in the cycle about people who support Donald Trump being racist. What kind of feedback did you get from that?
Well, an interesting amount of feedback. It won't surprise you to hear that there were plenty of people who shouted "Go Girl" at the top of their lungs. And there were also plenty of people who usually anonymously called the office or sent notes to the office with threats on myself, on my family. So a mixed bag, but for the most part, most people were supportive of me speaking up and speaking out and telling people how I feel.
Are you still standing behind that sentiment?
I stand behind the fact that this president is a racist. And if you can't see that, and if you don't believe that he should stop the racist policies that he's putting forward, then you must also be a racist.
What are you doing to try and keep your Democratic Party and the activists energized going into this election when, again, we're seeing polling show that Trump is not doing particularly well here? Democrats seem to be doing well in polling. But, you know, there's always the chance that it doesn't work out, that the momentum doesn't keep going like is what happened in 2016.
It's an interesting place for us to be because we're also in this virtual world where we can't gather people together to have the exciting rallies that folks love to have. So we're doing a lot of conversations on Zoom or other means. We're doing a lot of phone calls. We're doing a lot of text messaging. We're getting people together the ways that we can, the safe ways we can, to talk about the importance of this election and to get them excited and fired up to participate in the election, to participate as volunteers. And thousands of people have volunteered with this campaign. And we try our best to make them feel like a community of folks working together. When they can't gather in a campaign office the way we're accustomed to, it becomes a virtual sort of phone banking party that we're having. But we're having them, and people are feeling it and are enjoying it. I was on a call the other day with one of our volunteers who said, "I'm so fired up." And you know what? This works. The phone calls actually work. People pick up the phone and they listen to what we have to say, and we have good conversations. So we feel good about how it's going.
It may already be settled by the time the podcast runs, but I'm curious. I know you're probably going to say Gretchen Whitmer, but other than Gretchen Whitmer, who would be your favorite for Biden to pick for vice president?
I think that the Vice President Biden needs to pick the woman that he believes will be the best partner for him. I don't have a choice there because I think this is Joe Biden's decision to make. Joe Biden needs someone smart who can lead the country alongside him and be a partner to him the way he was a partner to Barack Obama. Gretchen Whitmer obviously would be a perfect choice in that case, but this is Joe Biden's choice to make, and I trust him to make a good one.
There's been some commentary that Biden would be advised to pick an African-American woman to be his running mate. Do you share that as being something that's very important?
You can't see me. I'm raising my hand. I'm volunteering to be vice president.
You'd be a great pick, Lavora.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate you saying that. Here's the thing. I think as you talk about this party, the backbone of this party, I've said it many times, has been the African-American woman. We have carried this party so many ways and so many times, and I think we would all be thrilled to finally see a Black woman on the ticket. That said, I'm going to go right back to what I said before. Joe Biden needs to pick the woman that he knows he can work with and can partner with and will be a good partner for him and a good vice president. And I trust him to do it.
You had mentioned
there's no office pool.
There is no office pool. I won't allow it.
Well, we have one.
I don't remember when's the office pool anyway. So.
At MERS, we do have a pool going on it, and I've already lost. So.
Oh, wow.
I had Klobuchar, but this was a long time ago. And but John is still in it. He was the only one to pick Val Dennings.
Wow, John. How early did you pick Val Dennings? Wow. Impressive.
When do we make that?
Oh, gosh.
April?
I think it was April, yeah.
April?
Nice. That's a good, that was a good pick. Good for you.
Well, I'm a Harley rider, so I'm very impressed by the fact that she rides a Harley, Dave.
That's cool. That is cool.
Lavoie, you had mentioned earlier about the phone banking that's going on, and I wanted to ask about the door knocking. You know, in some districts in this state, the Republicans have done some door knocking to some success. What are you telling your volunteers about what they should do in regards to showing up on people's door during COVID-19?
Yeah, we've been very clear that as a party, we are not ready to be asking our volunteers or our staff to go out and canvass. I think that we may get to a point where, you know, some folks, particularly around GOTV, would love to get out and do our door hangers that we traditionally do. And so we may eventually get to the point where we ask people to mask up and do some sort of lit drop sort of work. But we're just not comfortable making that ask of our volunteers. Now, I do know some candidates on the Dem side who've done some door knocking where, you know, they go out with their masks and sometimes gloves and they knock and they step back 6 feet and they wait for folks to be comfortable to have a conversation and have that conversation. And I want to be able to get there, but until we are comfortable that the health of our public and our volunteers and our staff is protected, I'm not ready to ask folks to do that for us.
Now, obviously, you're intimately involved with the House Democratic operation, and there's going to be a keen focus on what can be done to pick up some seats for Democrats. Realistically, what is a realistic goal for the House Democrats to get by the end of this election? Are we talking, is 60 seats too much or 58? What do you think the number is for a realistic pickup?
That's a good question, Kyle. All I can tell you is that it is realistic that we will have a Democratic majority in the House. I feel confident that we can pick up the seats we need for that majority. How big that majority will be, I think we need to get a little bit closer in and get a little better sense of what's happening on the ground to get to a number.
Are there any particular districts you're worried about as far as incumbent Democrats? And what would you point to as things that you're looking at?
You know, the incumbent Democrats, I think, have done a terrific job of getting themselves in good shape to be reelected. They're working hard. They're doing an excellent job as much as they are able to in a Republican-controlled legislature to be good legislators. They're raising the money. They're doing a good job. So I am less worried about our protects, and I'm very focused on helping the State House pick up seats where we need to pick them up. Our protects will take good care of themselves, I think.
All right, let's give our listeners a good dark horse. Who's a Lavoie Barnes dark horse for state rep?
I don't know if he's a dark horse, but everybody should watch Dan O'Neill. I love Dan O'Neill. He's doing terrific work over in the Grand Traverse area. He's a terrific candidate, and that's a seat I feel like we could grab with Dan O'Neill running for it.
Well, if you grab Dan O'Neill, I would fair to guess that you guys are going to get majority at that point.
I agree.
Maybe that's why she picked Dan O'Neill. You get Dan O'Neill and you got 56 for sure.
There you go. Yes.
All right. Any other thoughts from the primary that you want to share?
No, I think the big thing is that we're going to do it all again in November, only bigger. I'm telling all of our volunteers to remind voters that, you know, we go right back to the message we had before the primary, which is get that absentee ballot, get it voted and get it in early. We got to help these clerks out. We can't have these showing up late and at the last minute. We've got to get it right.
Oh, real quick, the state Democratic convention. What's that going to look like?
So we're virtual, obviously. Again, so we will do a week of voting, sort of the way the national convention is doing a week of voting for our delegates to the national convention, and then we'll have a day of terrific meetings and speeches all. Virtually, and then we will announce the winners who will be our exciting nominees for all of those state boards. And of course, we will officially nominate our candidates for Supreme Court as well. It's going to be a good day. And we're going to try to build in some training and other exciting things for folks over the course of the 2 days.
Excellent. Well, Lavoie Barnes, chair of the Michigan Democratic Party, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
My pleasure. Great to be here with both of you.
And that's going to do it for this week's edition of the MERS Monday podcast. Thanks to Janelle Leonard from the Marketing Resource Group for joining us, TJ Buchholz from Vanguard, and of course the boss, John Rurink. You know, you guys all gave your picks for vice president. Mine got out a long time ago. My pick was Amy Klobuchar, and she's already taken her name out. So I don't know if I've got a pick. Maybe I'll just play the field. Like, you guys can have those top three picks, and I'll just have the field. I'll have whoever's left. Does that count, or is that chickening out?
You can be the quarterback. Yeah, that's chickening out.
Yeah, you can be the quarterback, saying you're keeping it quiet until it actually comes out.
Well, Kyle, I think you could, you know, none of us really pick Gretchen Whitmer. I think you could go here, pick Gretchen Whitmer, and look like a hero to our governor and perhaps the next vice president if you went that way officially right now.
Yeah, but I already wrote this column in City Pulse about how she wasn't going to get it. And so if I came out now and said she would get it, then I'd look like a flip-flopper. I don't want to do that.
You're a politician. Whatever.
I'll play the field. I'll say whoever, you guys got the top three, and whoever else, then that will be my pick. But I think one of you three will probably be right. But I'm going to play the field. All right. Thanks to AT&T for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.